This is Bristol Band Beyond, KDLG's weekly news magazine. It's Friday, October 28th. I'm Dave Benninger. We're happy to be back in our regular spot after a short break and glad to have you joining us. Coming up this week.
The winter's going to start off warm, but it looks like as we get along deeper into the winter, things should cool down to near normal.
The latest on our winter outlook from the National Weather Service. We'll profile a fourth-generation pilot who is just getting into the air taxi business and already has a nickname, according to his mom.
I was in the store the other day, and one of the passengers that flew in with Cade said how proud he was that Cade was flying, and the people were calling him Little Cowboy.
Plus, BBRSDA Board President Mike Fracero joins to talk about some post-season fisheries issues and reflect on 2016.
My reaction to this season, in a word, is wow.
And Nancy Morris Lyon tells us how the annual Fish and Feast fundraiser in Bristol Bay went this year.
It has become the event of Bristol Bay, and it makes it really fun because I refuse to let anybody know the menu before they get there, so they never know what they're going to get fed.
Plus, the kids next door tell us what they're going to be on Monday. Those stories are coming up after a look back at some of this week's news. For the second time in 2 years, the N&N Market in downtown Dillingham cleared its shelves of all inventory. Its fire sale last weekend, drawing large crowds of shoppers who stood in line for hours for food and goods marked down as much as 90%. Steve Wassley was among the early shoppers just after the doors opened last Friday.
I think it's great, but it's sad that it came to this, but this is better than what they call that Christmas bazaar. This is a better sale. I think we should have more sales. This is great to see the whole community out.
Vandals broke into the N&N on October 9th and set the store on fire. Police have recovered some of the stolen goods, but have not named any suspects. N&N plans to repair damages before restocking and reopening later this fall. The Cleveland volcano in the Aleutian Islands had a brief explosion Monday, which was heard by residents in Nikolsky, 45 miles away. Alaska Volcano Observatory geologist Chris Way Thomas says this is common behavior for the often restless volcano.
Think of Cleveland as a classic champagne cork coming out. Lava accumulates in the summit crater, tends to pressurize, and then occasionally that lava cap gets exploded out just like a cork coming out of a bottle.
Cleveland's last significant eruption was back in 2001. The Bristol Bay Red King Crab season was already halfway to its harvest quota by Monday, just a little more than a week after opening. Crab captains are telling Fish and Game and others that the fishing has been good and the quality has been excellent this season. SeafoodNews.com said the Seattle price of $20.11 per pound is the best since 2011. The Kodiak Fish and Game Office announced the closure of the popular January Tanner crab fisheries in the Westward region for the fourth year in a row. Biologist Mark Stickert says a recent survey did not find enough mature males.
This year we were either right at or just below the minimum threshold necessary for a fishery, so we decided to keep the fishery closed for this year. One positive outlook is that it does look like there are some crab out there that are just below the legal size, and we'll be looking towards next year's survey to see that if enough of them around next year, there's a higher probability of having a fishery in certain spots next year.
He's hopeful the Tanner crab fisheries in Kodiak, the Chignecks, and South Peninsula will be open again by January of 2018. In Boulder, Colorado this week, Bristol Bay sockeye is the featured menu item in 17 participating restaurants. The nonprofit Chefs Collaborative hosts the week-long event to help call attention to wild, sustainable seafood. Arcana head chef Kyle Mendenhall has been happy to put the salmon with a story on the plates of his customers.
You know, what I'm partially trying to do in the sort of small blip of work that I do with Bristol Bay and whatnot is to just try to help Americans know that we have this incredible, well-managed resource available to us, and the only way to really take advantage of it is to get out there and eat it.
Chefs Collaborative estimates tens of thousands of customers will be served Bristol Bay sockeye around the Boulder area this week. The state's Alcohol Beverage Control Board tabled a controversial request to approve the transfer of a liquor license to a proposed new country store up Dillingham's Lake Road. The city has protested the transfer. The owner's attorney will argue the statutory requirements have been met, but he could not actively participate in the meeting remotely. The matter, which has drawn much public interest, will come up again in February. Two separate storms are expected to slam into southwest Alaska this weekend. The first will bring winds of up to 70 miles an hour through the day Friday and may push seas up to 20 feet in the Bering Sea. Another storm will pass through Sunday and may push seas up to 30 feet. And a new coffee shop opened this morning in Dillingham. Tide Table coffee owner Chanel Foe started serving a steady stream of customers at 6:30.
The soft opening going really well. It's been pretty busy. The spread of word of mouth is going really well.
The grand opening is scheduled for tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. More on this week's news can be found at our website, kdlg.org. Listening to Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. I'm Dave Benninger. We're happy to have this program back on at its regular spot, and we'll start this week with the weather. Another warm, wet, and windy weekend. We'll be mocking our idle winter toys. What say the experts about the months ahead? To find out if we should plan for another boring winter or maybe something better, I'm happy to be joined by Bill Ludwig, a senior forecaster at the NWS office in Anchorage. Bill, thanks for coming on the program. What's the latest? I know there's been talk about coming from this monster El Nino to possibly La Nina. Where are we at with that? And translate that for us. What will it mean, do you think?
Well, it looks like that there possibly could be a weak La Nina, but the drivers from the tropics this year as far as El Nino, La Nina is going to be pretty weak. Probably the biggest driver that we have, at least in the early part of the winter, is that the waters around Alaska are very warm at this point. But it looks like the very warm winters we've been having the last couple of years, it looks like there's a possibility that that's going to come to an end. The outlook for this year is the winter's going to start off warm because of those warm waters, but it looks like as we get along deeper into the winter, into a January, February, March, things should cool down to a good chance that it's going to be near normal as far as temperatures go, and same for precipitation. Once you get west of Dillingham, there's a chance that winter will actually be wetter than normal, and when you get east of, down toward Anchorage and those areas later in the winter, it looks like it's going to be drier than normal.
Last year we had something of a blocking ridge, and I sort of understood that to be attributed to El Nino, but whatever the situation was, it funneled these Bering Sea storms into the Bristol Bay area, one right after the next. Big winds, lots of rain, warm temperatures and such. Is that no longer as likely as we shift into a different weather pattern?
Well, it's still likely in the early part of the winter. In fact, over the next couple of weeks, it looks like we're going to get into that kind of pattern. But it looks like as we get deeper into the winter, more into December, January, then the pattern actually is going to more favor the ridge being over the Bering Sea, so kind of getting cooler, more northerly air rather than all those storms coming up from the south.
What would you advise a listener who's on the fence as to whether or not to buy that new pair of skis or maybe invest in a new snow machine this year? It's not been good for about 3 years running. Would this be the year to pull the trigger?
Well, I can't really give advice like that, but I would say that there's, at least this winter, that since the driving forces aren't so strong, that there is a better chance that we will be near a normal winter down there and not quite as extreme as we've had the last couple of years.
Well, that's pretty good news, and appreciate you sharing.
No problem.
That was Bill Ludwig at the National Weather Service office in Anchorage. This is Bristol Bay and Beyond, back in a moment. Not the last time you'll hear that Guns N' Roses track this fall, I assure you. Well, another Fish and Feast has come and gone. It has become the singular event of the fall season and is proving an incredibly successful fundraiser for Bristol Bay School District activities. This year, raising more than $50,000. We are sorry to say that we missed it yet again, but Nancy Morris-Line of the Bear Trail Lodge in King Salmon hosts the event, and she was in Dillingham this week. I was lucky to catch up with her at the airport just before she flew back to catch a recap. Nancy, good to catch up with you.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Good to see you again.
Okay, before we talk about Fish and Feast, you are the chairman of the board of the Naknek Electric Association. There's been some money that was misspent or mismanaged or what have you. Members have known about it for a little bit of time, but not all the details have come out. Is there anything more yet that the board can tell us about that situation?
No, not yet at this time, Dave. We're hoping to be able to disclose more information in the near future, but we don't have it yet.
I do gather that you do want to talk about the situation and lay out what did happen when you can.
Absolutely. We want everybody to know exactly what happened, at least our idea of how it happened, in order for others to learn from it, not just as board members, but as individuals. We think there's going to be lots of lessons that people can learn from this, and we hope that people do take it away as that.
We'll check in with you about that next week and see what's changed, but let's talk about Fish and Feast. What is Fish and Feast for those who don't know, and how did it go this year?
Well, it's an annual event. It's become to be an annual event that we hold as a fundraiser for our school activities, which means that we cover everything from the spelling bee to the basketball team to the wrestling team, cross-country runners. Anybody, any student who participates in any activity at all is helped to be funded by this event. And what we do is we bring together a lot of people who are involved in my fishing industry, as well as other interested community members, and Pennair, who is a huge supporter of ours, and it could absolutely not be done without their assistance. And we offer basically a fun night of frivolity, entertainment, and really, really good food.
It's the bash to be at, right? This is the thing of the year.
It has become the event. It has become the event of Bristol Bay, and it makes it really fun because I refuse to let anybody know the menu before they get there, so they never know what they're going to get fed. We have fed them everything from venison one year to little baby octopus one year, and this year was actually not too wild. We stuck with some beautiful pork loin and pork belly, so it was interesting.
One thing I've heard about this is that the kids who will benefit, they play an important role in these evenings.
Yes, they do. They're a key element to the evening. They're required to get dressed up to the nines. Girls have to be in dresses, and boys have to have a tie on. And it's mandatory, and they know darn good well when they get there, if they don't have that on, they will be washing dishes. And if we've been lucky enough for the last few years to have everybody show up well-dressed, so we've had to appoint dishwashers, but everybody works their tail off. It isn't necessarily a fun event for the kids, but they park the cars, they clear the plates, they pick up the glasses and the trash, and they mop the floors afterwards, and they show our guests how appreciative they are by constantly waiting on them the entire time they're there.
Everybody knows that with shrinking budgets, activities are harder to fund. How did you do this year, and what's that make possible?
You know, it is, and it was in recognition of those shrinking budgets that this whole scheme was kind of hatched on my husband and myself's part. And, you know, we've worked our way up, and this year I'm very proud to say we don't have a final figure yet, and it will be made available at sometime in the future, but luckily we're still receiving donations, and we will crack the $50,000 mark this year, so we're extremely excited about that, and it will make a world of difference for all of our student-athletes and student government participants and everybody who benefits from it.
Sorry to say that we missed again this year. We'll shoot for it next year to come cover it as it happens. It sounds like the place to be, but congratulations, and thanks so much, Nancy.
Oh, thank you, Dave. Thanks for acknowledging it.
Always looking to profile people on this program. If you know of someone whose efforts, work, or spirit are inspiring or unique, please let us know. This week, KDLG's Avery Lill tells us about one young man in Dillingham who is just getting into the air taxi business like his father, grandfather, and great-grandfather before him.
Hi, this is a Cherokee 6300. It's a Piper. Six passengers. Low wing.
That's Cage Slagle, showing off the aircraft he's been flying around Bristol Bay's villages for the last couple of months. Since he started Bushhoppers LLC in September, business has been picking up.
It's been busy here and there. It's weird. It'll be slow and then everyone will call right at once.
There's no question. Air taxis are indispensable to Alaskans who live off of the road system. Some in the aviation industry are worried that Alaska will suffer from a pilot shortage in the coming years. But for Schlegel, flying's in his blood. Starting an air taxi business in his hometown of Dillingham just a few years after graduating high school was a natural thing to do.
I kind of always knew I was going to be living here in Dillingham and flying. And I don't know, my grandpa did this and my dad does this. And so, yeah, it's kind of in my blood. So
did his great-grandfather, Ken Armstrong, who was the first in the clan to move to the area in the middle of the last century. Before he came up, Ken Armstrong guided mule tours in the Grand Canyon. His rope skills earned him a nickname when he started flying in Bristol Bay, as his granddaughter, Kate's mom, Janet Armstrong Schlegel, recalls.
And so when he came out to this area, the native people called him Cowboy because he did the rope tricks. And then my dad grew up out here, and he flew in the 50s out here. And the people started calling my dad Cowboy Ayagak, which means little cowboy. And so that stuck. And then my brother Kurt flew for the Air Service, so he was little cowboy. I was in the store the other day, and one of the passengers that flew in with Cade said how proud he was that Cade was flying, and the people were calling him Little Cowboy.
The Armstrongs and Schlegels have built their businesses around flying and fishing Bristol Bay. Janet beams with pride as she talks about Cade and his new outfit, Bush Hoppers, even as she knows it might be a bit of an uphill climb to get it going.
I think that the business of air taxi is very competitive, and I think there is definitely a market for a young person, you know, to get into the business, but it is very competitive.
So far, Schlegel has had no shortage of business and doesn't seem to have stepped on any of the veterans' toes either. Running a bush air taxi isn't your average 9-to-5er, but he's getting the hang of it.
It's a lot of running around and getting boxes and, I don't know, just meeting new people and flying to different places. Winter is going to be a big obstacle, I think, in the darkness. It's going to be dark all the time, but I don't know. I'm just going to have fun with it and still enjoy the things I like to do in life and not let it get in the way, but still fly around and have fun with it.
In the next 5 years, he wants to expand his operations to fly a float plane like his dad. Schlegel enjoys being in the air, and business is taking off. But of course, that means flying is now his full-time job, which this little cowboy admits can take some of the fun out of it.
It's still fun, but I like to go out and go beachcombing a lot more than doing this, you know. Go look for walrus heads or glass balls and stuff like that.
And honestly, who can argue? In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill. Time for me to fly.
As this program took a little break this fall, the state's summary of Bristol Bay's 2016 commercial salmon season was issued and the dust has settled a bit. It's never too late to recap and reflect on our fishery. For our Friday conversation, I'm happy to have Mike Frisero joining by phone from Kodiak. Frisero skippers the Miss Gina and is the current board president for the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association. Mike, I'd like to talk about some of the postseason discussions that are going on, but first let's look back to last summer. The numbers are in from Fish and Game. 2016's total inshore run of 51.4 million sockeye was the second biggest in 20 years. The harvest of all salmon species was the biggest in 20 years. Mostly good news. What say you?
Well, my reaction to this season in a word is wow. And to elaborate on that, I mean, it had a beautiful season. The management looked very intuitive in hindsight and did a great job of managing the fishery, especially given the you know, lesser funding and fewer tools to work with. And the run is in great shape biologically, and the early indications for next year are for another big harvest.
Did anything not go as well as intended from your perspective or from average drifter perspective out there?
Well, I didn't see any real issues that I would, you know, react to. I fish ABJIC and a half for 35 years, and we basically had, you know, enough fish early to get rolling, so that was probably the big difference for us. And we had the registration changes from the last Board of Fish cycle, so you had to drop your card in order to go fishing, so we didn't have the early interlopers, is what I like to say, in our way in ABJIC. And so it was basically, you know, the boats that wanted to fish there were there, and everybody else was in their river. And fortunately for us, we didn't have to wait, you know, an extra 2 weeks to go fishing. We started rolling here fairly well around, you know, the last week of June. And from then, it just gradually picked up momentum. And the tail end of the run was, you know, like everybody else, just a blur of, you know, round-the-clock fishing and plenty of opportunity, along with pretty severe weather. So the westerlies were prevailing the whole season, and which is good for the east side, where you would think. The fish tended to run offshore this year, so that was different. The late arrival in some of the districts, I think, was only offset by the experience from last year, so everybody could look at 2015 and gain some hope. So rare that 2 years come in so similar, so it was nice to have that comfort level, but really amazing that it actually worked that way.
Right. I think we picked up on that from our vantage, that the Naknek Kwejak fleet sat a little bit more patiently waiting on what proved to be a good run. They were the only district that didn't do as well compared to the rest. How about your buddies that fished Ugashik? Quite a season over there.
Well, yeah, I guess that was the best one ever. Hard to not like that. You know, the whole dynamic of when they fish and why they fish and versus their escapement, and, you know, any conversation about what fish they're catching or anything like that is always part of that whole conversation. And, you know, we certainly don't begrudge Ugashik a great season by any means.
All right. Mike, as the RSDA looks at its role supporting this fishery, in view of what we know are declining state budgets and cuts to the fish and game operating budget that manages this fishery, which I think most people acknowledge is managed well, the RSDA is contributing more and more money to the cause. And I'd like to ask you, what do you see as that as the future of that?
Yeah, good question. Our reaction to the so-called, I call it cost recovery, but they call it test fishing, and we could touch on that, but it's just a different way of looking at the same thing. So you've got cost recovery, is the test fishing that happens before the season to a very large extent to make up, you know, large budget shortfalls. Last year was about $250,000, and the value of that fish is extremely low. I mean, the value of the fish is high, but with the reward to fish and game and the income stream from catching, you know, approximately 800,000 pounds is extremely low. It's a very poor economic model. And so the short answer is that, you know, we did what we did because of pure necessity and a short time frame. There was no scenario where we thought that in the best interest of the common property fishermen and the permit holders of Bristol Bay that this cost recovery fishing was any kind of a good idea. And in fact, Fish and Game didn't like it much either. So that was a powerful collaboration that went very quickly. And most of those discussions and board votes and so forth happened after our industry meeting in March, when Fish and Game rolled out the whole program to us. And actually, they were intending to take a great deal of the value from the Inuksuk and also in the Kings. And because they typically take this from Middle Bluff, it impacts the east side, and because it's potentially going to become more and more, they want to spread the impact through all districts. And so they had a real keen idea that a great amount of this, or a significant amount, was going to come from the Inuksuk area. And the way the fish ran last year, there was very little at Middle Bluff, and really a large volume of fish between the Kwejak and the Inuksuk, and they probably would have just focused right on that, and I don't think that would have made anybody happy as a permit holder, it would have contributed to even more waiting time and less escapement. So it's just a really poor model economically. So the RSA did agree to fund the department up to $250,000 to avoid the cost recovery fishery that would have otherwise taken over 800,000 pounds of fish right off the top of the total allowable catch, essentially taking fish that could otherwise be harvested by our fishermen. While the RSTA did make the initial commitment, several processes have contributed to our efforts to help offset the cost. To date, we have received $70,000 in contributions from Icicle, North Pacific, Peter Pan, Ocean Beauty, AGS, and Leader Creek, and we are really pleased with the support of these efforts by the processors. Next year remains to be seen, but several regional entities, including BBRSDA, are looking at alternative ways to help close the gap and ensure that Bristol Bay continues to get the funding to maintain a level of management that is critical for the sustainability of the fishery.
All right, so it looks like you're not backing away from the support, but perhaps seeking to make sure that others are stepping in as well.
Absolutely. No, we don't see that as the RSDA's appropriate way to utilize the funds from the tax, but we also did not see any way that we could not intervene in the moment last year.
The fall season after the fishery, I know the fleet always looks forward to seeing the forecast come out and the rest, but usually by Pacific Marine Expo, there are a few other issues that are right at the front of everybody's mind, whether it's the permit buyback program in the past or the genetic studies that come out that everybody's anxious for, or even the pebble issue in the past has been kind of a fall time discussion point. What's on the minds of the fleet this fall, and what do we expect to talk about come Pacific Marine Expo in November?
Well, I can tell you that price will probably be at the top of everybody's minds, because you've got a fleet that has some pretty significant catch in. Statewide overall, poor returns, so our market share is good, and I think everyone's going to be real sensitive to retroactive payments for the 2016 season. I think that's going to be, the talk on the floor. Anything that happens regarding price with any of the processes will resonate through the show fairly quickly. And our member meeting is going to be on the second day of Expo, actually, or the Friday, the 18th, from 1 to 3. So we have a room, and we have it in the second half of one of the main days. So I think our timing is better for member attendance, and we're hoping to have a very robust meeting. Andy Wink of McDowell Group will be presenting the fall sockeye market analysis, and it will be very interesting to see the X vessel value percentage versus first wholesale, which is one of their main, best work product from that for the permit holders to look at, and give you a very good idea of where we're at with our, what we're getting paid versus the overall value of the wholesale level of the catch.
We'll leave it right there. Mike Frisero, skipper of the fishing vessel Miss Gina and current board president of the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association. Good as always to talk with you, Mike, and we'll probably see you down south at Pacific Marine Expo. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. I'll be there with my ears open and with a willing attitude to go to work, and we really appreciate KDLG.
That will just about do it for this week's show, but of course we can't ignore the coming holiday, just in case you're wondering who might knock on your door Monday night. Avery Lill toured the haunted halls of the Dillingham Elementary School to see what's all the rave in Hallowed Eve's fashion 2016.
That's my last name, and I'd be a witch.
My
My name is James, and I'll be a ninja. I'm in third grade. And Caden's really smart, too, often. And I could be Supergirl. And this, around in the this little line.
True, and I want to be a black cat for Halloween because some black cats can scratch. I'm not gonna because my mom won't allow it.
Just.
Hey, what grade are you in?
Hi, Katie.
First.
Tell me about your Halloween costume.
I'm gonna be a ninja.
Whoa, how are you
going to
make it look?
With swords on the back.
Kathy Anderson.
Sword!
Second grade.
What are you going to be for Halloween?
Batman girl.
Nice.
Batman girl. Batman girl.
My name is Layla Gross, and I'm going to be a vampire for Halloween.
Cool. What's your costume going to look like?
I'm going to have bite marks on my face. They're painted. And, I'm gonna have wings attached to a dress.
Students there over the Dillingham Elementary School gym, or elementary school rather, none of them telling us what treats they're hoping to get, one step at a time. That's it for this week's show. Of course, some of you may remember we had a lot of fun last year on our Halloween special. By request, we'll re-air that show with all of its good spooky stories Monday night at 7 o'clock. Please keep the feedback and story ideas coming and let us know if you have a poem, song, or essay we could air. Email Dave at KDLG or give us a call here at the station. You can find this and past episodes of Bristol Bay and Beyond at our website, KDLG.org. I'm Dave Benninger. My thanks to Avery Lill for her help this week. We'll see you back here next Friday.